What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Think Computer's weekly tech podcast. This is episode number 324. And today, I am not here with Bob. I'm here with Jim Collison from Home Gadget Geeks. How's it going, Jim?
Hey Ryan, good to be here. I mean, I'm no Bob, but I'll do my
No,
best. I'll
yeah,
do my best.
we'll talk about Bob in a minute, and we'll even see Bob tonight. But as always, Think Computer's tech podcast brought to you by Amazon. If you go to thinkcomputers.org/Amazon, and you make a purchase there, we're going to get a commission off of that purchase there. It just kind of helps us keep the site going, keep the podcast going, and things like that. So Jim and I were talking a little bit before the show. You know, it's summertime. All the news is about the weather. It's super hot here. I know Jim's got some weather there. You guys going to get any reprieve from that anytime soon, you
No, 105
think?
or something like that on Saturday. So
Yeah, I figured
it's gonna get pretty warm. But I think we get some rain and then it'll be it's like everything else. It changes. It's just fine. We'll be okay.
Yep. No, I get you. I'm ready for that. We snuck away to the pool after work for a little bit today to cool off. Got back here ready to podcast. So yeah, we've got some reviews. Like I said, Bob's not here for the show, but he did record some footage for us. So when we get into that, we'll bring him up. So I'm gonna be your fumbling host for the evening. So we'll just go ahead and get right into our reviews of the week, and it's actually a review that I did, and we're going to take a look at the Cooler Master CK721. Let me pull this over here. Let's do this one. Got to remember which one I want to use. So, and I've got it here with us, but we're going to go through the review real quick. So this is actually the first wireless keyboard that I have taken a look at. I know Bob's taken a look at a few, but Cooler Master sent over the CK721. And there's a couple features that I wanted to kind of just bring up with regards to the keyboard. The first one is its triple connectivity options. We have a standard wired connection with a USB-C connection. So it's going to work as your standard desktop or laptop keyboard in a wired mode. But we also have a dongle that comes with it for 2.4 gigahertz connectivity. And we get the same connectivity speeds and response times through that dongle as we do with the wired connection. So that's pretty nice that we can kind of keep those same statistics and performance. And then there's also Bluetooth 5.1 connectivity there with the keyboard. Let's see here. Comes with TTC switches, mechanical switches. We've got a couple choices for those switches. We've got red, brown, and blue. Jim, I don't know. Are you a mechanical keyboard kind of guy? Do you use mechanical switches? Do you like them? If you do you have a preference for your switch type?
No, I actually the quieter the better for me,
Okay.
because I podcast so much. So I'm the opposite of this. I want it wired because I don't trust wireless for that kind of stuff. No matter what I'm doing, right in the middle of a show, battery goes dead or whatever, right? It disconnects for whatever reason.
Absolutely.
So and then I'm a Mac keyboard guy. So I
Okay.
even though I'm a PC guy, I've used Mac keyboards because they're super quiet. So that's kind of
Yep.
what I kind of lean towards that so they can't hear me type when I'm on the
Yeah.
podcast.
No, that makes perfect sense. Yeah, the reason I really like those three connectivity options is I could have it here at my desk, you know, for when I was typing, whether it's, you know, just doing regular web surfing or gaming with it, right? When I was doing my gaming testing, I've got it sitting here, the cables ran to it. I unplug that, throw it in my work bag, take it to work, and then type on it all day at work. Now, productivity-wise, being a 65% keyboard, I don't have that numpad, right? I'm missing some of those features that you get in a full-sized keyboard. And this shot
Do
here
you
is
use a number pad often in what you're doing? Because I find I don't use number pads.
I do, and I miss it when I don't have it. It's not a terrible amount, but it's enough that I prefer to have it when I'm doing productivity work and things like that. But there's a couple other features I wanted to go over. Like I said, 65%. So we've got you know, some of those missing features and options, but we do have this really awesome control knob towards the top right of the keyboard, and it's programmable. So by default, it's going to control your audio, right? Volume up and down, and it also clicks in, so you can mute your microphone or your sound. But you can also set different profiles for this, and depending on those profiles, you can set all sorts of, you know, options, whether it's something like using it with Photoshop and using it to zoom in on a certain part of the image, or you know, adjust a brush size or something like that. All anything you could think of that might take advantage of an up or down dial and being able to click that in, you can essentially do that here with the CK721.
Like Ryan, I love how keyboards are still a thing. Like, it's like we've been computing for what, like 40, 50 years now, whatever. The keyboard hasn't fundamentally changed, like the layout or where things are or whatever.
Right. We're still pretty much QWERTY layout. And yeah.
But we still are making new keyboards. I mean, we are still making, there's still options for them. There's still, you know, you've got these, you can really kind of get any style or anything you want from super mechanical to super quiet to from small to super large. Like this customization of having a dial where now you can do some settings and change that up and down. I mean, it's to me, it's interesting. We're still innovating on a 50-year-old, you know, piece of equipment.
Absolutely. And, you know, not only, you know, customization on the feel of the keyboard, right? You've got the tactical or the lineal or the tactile switches, right? Depending on what your preference is, but also looks. So right here on this image, the top aluminum plate actually comes off of the keyboard, so you can swap it out with another colored one. The model we looked at is kind of a space gray aluminum top. They also make this in white as well, so you can switch that up. But these switches are also RGB enabled, right? So we're going to be able to adjust their lighting and things like that within Cooler Master's Master Plus software. So I'll kind of go over that real quick. It's your pretty standard customizations though with software, right? We're going to expect we can make some changes to the wireless settings regarding our sleep timeout, right? To save some battery and low power mode after certain amounts of time. We can obviously adjust every key's lighting to our heart's content, make it look however you want, along with a bunch of pre-configured options as well, which is, this is again, everything standard. Key mapping, if you want to set a key to have a certain custom function when you're using a certain application, that's all possible here. And then of course, macros and profiles, right? As soon as you launch Photoshop, I want the layout of my keyboard to change up and I want the lights to change so that I know what function is where. But when I launch a game, I want to have a gaming layout and lighting to go along with that. So those are some of the things you can do there. And then just a couple examples, right, of the lighting available with this keyboard. I was pretty happy with the performance, the lighting, the look, the feel, the sound. These are ABS keycaps on these as well, but they definitely sound like PBT, double shot PBT even. And, you know, that's just plastic, different plastic materials, Jim. ABS is kind of the cheaper option, more mainstream, right? You get into PBT, which is just a little higher quality plastic, and it's usually gone through a process of what's called double shot. So you kind of have your legend that's molded, and then the rest of the keycap is molded around. So it's kind of a two-layered plastic, just has that deeper, richer sound, right? Kind of like how a luxury car's door closes and you get that satisfying sound. And then you go and, you know, close your 85 Corolla or whatever, right? And it sounds like it's going to fall apart. Kind of that type of difference there in those. So I was really impressed with the feel and sound that we got out of this keyboard. Usage was great. I had this configured with the red switches. I'm used to using red switches for my daily driver here at my desk. And the feel difference between the cherry reds that I have on my daily driver and the TTC reds, you know, they feel so similar. So I was able to just start using this keyboard right away. Every now and then you switch to a different switch type or a little different keycap feel or layout or design, and it takes a little bit to get used to, right? You have some of those misclicks, and you know you're using that backspace button a lot more than you're used to. Let's see here. Oh, and I've missed out on chat. Bob does this all the time. I'm gonna have to go back and check out some chat here. Bob, if you see something we need to call out, let me know.
We're just chatting out there. Do you think, perfect, Ryan? Is it time for me? You know, I mentioned as you think about this keyboard, and I come from an era maybe 10 years ago where when I started podcasting and wireless let me down. Has that gotten better? Like, is it time to quit saying that? And, you know, again, my Mac keyboards are like 15 years old, so they never go bad. They just keep working. But is it time for me to consider wireless for podcasting?
I think so. I mean, it's at least an option for you. And the thing, you know, wireless is nice. It cleans things up. If you don't need that performance and that instant, you know, response time for gaming or something like that, but you know, you need to type some comments to chat or bring up a different web page, something like that. I think the reliability is there. The battery life on these are great. Your software can a lot of times notify you that, hey, battery's getting low, you need to plug this thing in. Just like, you know, the wireless headsets will do the same thing. Hey, gonna need you to plug me in. I think they're definitely worth taking a look at. Okay. Absolutely.
Yeah, maybe I'll have to take a second look at some of these options now as I look at replacing keyboards.
Sure. Yeah. And you know, you can fit the dongle in this little door here on the side. So it goes right with it. I throw it in my bag, take it to work, and then toss it back on the desk here to use on my main system. I love this keyboard. It's available right now for $125. $125 for a wireless 3-mode connectivity keyboard, solid feel, high-end aluminum top to it. I give it a 10 out of a 10 and recommend it. I don't give 10s hardly ever, recommended every now and then, but I could not find anything majorly wrong with this. The only thing that I found to be a flaw, in my opinion, with this keyboard was that the USB Type-C connection at the top was a little small. It will work fine with the cable that comes with the keyboard, but if you want to use a custom cable, which is, again, going into that whole customization piece, you may not be able to get a different cable into the slot to be able to use it with this keyboard. I know that's a really minor thing, but a lot of folks, they want their cable to be customed and everything else, right? They want that look. It's about the look as well as the performance of the keyboard. That's my only drawback there. I love this thing. It may replace my Corsair K65 that I've been using for years as my daily driver, because it's going to give me a little more desk space here. I don't
even without the number pad.
I don't have the number pad here on my daily driver. The numpad is, you know, at work. That's where I want it.
Yeah.
But here, I think I may end up liking the extra desk space that we get from this keyboard.
Joe in the chat room says, "I'm 41. The keyboard is definitely not the slowest aspect of the chain." No, and it's a good reminder. I mean, I'm sure latency has gotten way better over the last decade as we think about that. And he says, my internal latency is definitely higher. So there's some of that too. I would hope. I was listening to another podcast today, and I think we have a new Bluetooth standard coming as well, which will help with lower latency over lower power even. And so we may see over the next 2 or 3 years, you know, even keyboards being able to take advantage of that. And you think, well, latency and keyboards were probably fine, but you can still, if you can bring your power consumption down on these things, every little bit helps. And absolutely. I did see Bob's checking in from the airport. He just landed in Chicago. Welcome, Bob.
What's going on? Hopefully you had a good flight. Hopefully you're not running behind to catch that next flight flight out. That's always a pain. But I'm guessing if he's got time to check in here, he's doing all right.
He's probably okay.
We'll go ahead and move on here. We're going to move on to Case Mod Friday. And again, we've got another build from GGF. We featured GGF many, many times on the site and their builds. And this is the really cool thing about this is he went ahead and used a case that's 10 years old. And 10 years in the case lifetime is like, it's ancient almost, right? You're talking about, there's no USB Type-C on the front of cases 10 years ago. You probably had cutouts in the back of a case for external water cooling devices, right? And now we're just putting everything on the inside. So we've got some really cool features here with this case. I get so amazed by the work that Stuart does at GGF. So we've got a bunch of EK water blocks and cooling components here. I believe everything, water cooling was EK, which is pretty standard for them. This is a high-end AMD and Ryzen system with a 5950X. And then a Red Devil 6900 XT Ultimate video card. I know recently we've featured some builds where they would have really custom high-end water cooling loops, but they were only doing the CPU and were leaving the standard cooling that came with a video card, so a fan. We've obviously got a nice water-cooled build here, though. I really like to see the full loops. The chrome tubing is always nice, especially in this color scheme, the red, the black, the chrome. I know, you know, Jim, your show and your kind of environment that you talk about on yours, you guys don't get into the necessarily the PC modding or the building as much. What do you think of these designs? And like you compare this to a Dell or an HP that you get at Best Buy or Office Max, and then you see these builds. Like what do you think of these?
Well, I think you need to have a place to display it. If you're going to buy something like this, it needs to be out in the open, right?
Yeah,
you know, I hear we've kind of built these command centers, at least the folks that listen to me or have been a part of my group. You know, we build these command centers, you know, where people don't see them. I don't see the purpose in it, but they are beautiful. Like I look at this and I just go, man, that would be, I'm a low maintenance kind of guy, Ryan. I kind of like easy, simple. I mean, I did buy some fans that had lighting in them, but
all right.
But these are beautiful. I you know, if this was going to be out in the open somewhere where people could see it and it could be, cause it's art.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. No, just straight lines here. That's one of my favorite pieces is when everything looks uniform and like it was designed to be this, even though it's all cut, you know, it's custom and it was designed to be this way. Sometimes you get builds with some wild bends in the tubes and everything like that. I really love the look of this. We've got a custom screen in the back, it looks like, to display some statistics of the system. Again, we have a whole library of these case mods for Case Mod Friday linked down at the bottom. If you want to submit your own case mod for the podcast, we will definitely take that into consideration, but definitely feel free to check out the existing content there that we put up every week. We also are giving away a case that we reviewed recently. Bob also put out a video for the case, but this is the Fractal Design Pop Air RGB. We are giving that away from Fractal Design. I haven't entered in to win it. That's all right. I'm not planning to, but you do have 16 ways to enter. We're running this through Gleam like we always do. So super simple to get signed up to have a chance to enter in to win this. I believe this is a US only contest, if I'm not mistaken. Yes, it is. And it will run from the 18th through the 16th of, I'm sorry, the 18th of July through the 16th of August. And as soon as we choose the winner, we will reach out and get a hold of them so we can get that shipped out. I really like this case. It's a pretty cool design from Fractal. They've got a bunch of different color combinations, great airflow, comes with three RGB LED fans. It's got this really cool, Jim, you might kind of think this is neat. I don't know. You know, we were so used to for a long time having these 5 1/4 inch bays on cases for our optical drives and things like that. This case does support those, but it also has a little carrying case, like a little parts tray you can utilize up at the front and behind this little tab. I just thought that was kind of a cool little feature, especially for like a $100 case, sub $100 case even. But I thought that was a pretty neat.
Case design is I'm looking, I think for VR purposes, I probably am looking at building a whole new system. Mm-hmm. And cases, one of the important, aspects of the design on this, and I may try to go minimalistic on it. So,
okay.
You know, Jay Madison, who's on Home Gadget Geeks from time to time, he's kind of a minimalistic kind of guy. I may look at some kind of his builds to keep that small but powerful. So that's, I'm kind of, you know, I got plenty of storage. You got like 82 terabytes here. So I'm not that interested in it having a lot of storage. But yeah, the case designs are just out of this world. I mean, I watch what you guys do. I subscribe to your email, so I get when, you know, you're posting new stuff, and they're just gorgeous. I mean, it's pretty amazing. And even the functional ones, the ones that aren't necessarily designed to be flashy, are still very beautiful now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I see Kevin Schoonover came over from the Home Gadget Geeks crowd. So thanks for joining us, Kevin. He said, I can never get my cables hidden away in the case well enough to make it look nice enough to have a window in the case. You know, it takes some time. There's always those custom cabling kits you could get, right? But if it's not something you're into, I totally understand that. It does take a little bit of work to make things look nice and tidy in there for sure. So I understand that sentiment. What I wanted to jump into next is kind of our main topic. And we're going to kind of talk loosely about summer tech and some of the things related to technology in the summer. And this is where I kind of referenced Bob earlier. He's checked in with us at the airport, but he put together some content for us to take a look at ahead of time. And Joe says, Jim's building a VR machine. This is news to Joseph. Yeah,
I haven't talked about this on my show. So spoiler alert. Exclusive content for you guys.
There you go. So I'm going to share a video from Bob, a couple minutes long. We'll just kind of sit back and watch this content. And we'll just kind of play off of that and work from there. Let's get this video going here.
What is up, guys? Sorry I can't make the podcast this week. I'm actually on a plane right now if you're watching this live. But I wanted to give you three products that I think are perfect for summer tech, which of course Jim and Ryan will be talking about. So the first thing I have here is a portable power bank. And I believe this one is the Anker PowerCore 10K Slim. I always like getting the slim versions of these because you can fit it in your pocket. If you're out with friends, you don't want some big bulky thing. This isn't all that bulky. And what's great about this is, again, you want to capture moments with your friends and family in the summer. And we typically do that with our cell phones. Those die, especially if you're using it a lot. So having a portable power bank is definitely something, you know, you should have in the summer. The next thing is a Bluetooth speaker. So whether you're, you know, out on a boat, whether you're around a campfire, just out on the deck, you want some good tunes for, you know, just to set that mood and, you know, just party with your friends. We recently reviewed this. This is the Tribit Stormbox Micro 2. Very small, so easily, you know, you can easily take it with you somewhere. And what's really great about it is that it sounds so amazing for its size. It really is just awesome for its size. And the second good thing about it is that the battery inside, you can charge other devices. So if you, you know, want to get this instead of this, you can do that because you have a power bank built into this, which is really cool. And then finally, we have a portable SSD. I love these things. If you guys listen to the podcast, you know that. If you're traveling, you know, and you're taking photos or you have a GoPro or something, you need to offload that footage. Portable SSDs just make things so much easier. Super fast, super easy. This is the ADATA SE880, and you can see just how small this is. I just love portable SSDs. So those are my three things for summer tech. Now let's get back to Ryan and Jim.
All right. So three items. I knew one of them was going to be portable SSDs because, like he said, like that is his thing. That's always there.
Yeah.
What do you think of his items? I think most of his were kind of travel related, right? Which makes sense, right? He's obviously traveling right now, going to be doing some vacationing. That battery bank that he talked about up front, it's kind of funny because I just ordered two of them for some folks that are going to be traveling for work in a couple of weeks. They said, hey, do we have any of these that we can take with us? One of the rooms that we're going to be, you know, in all day doesn't have a lot of power access and there's going to be a lot of people in there. Do we have one? And I was like, you know, we don't, but let me look at what we can get for you. Ordered up some Dell battery banks for them to go with their, you know, they're kind of certified to work along with their Dell laptop. I'm going to throw those in. So I thought that was really kind of a pertinent order there.
Yeah, batteries have gotten really inexpensive and very handy just to have. I think I have four, and they're maybe 10,000, you know, whatever the letters are after the fact, you know. And they're good enough. I throw them in my bag. I've got them. I can't actually tell you the last time I used one. The pandemic changed my habits, so I haven't really used one recently, but good to have on hand. I think that's a good one.
Yeah.
One of the things Bob mentioned is a speaker, and I just finished 15 years anniversary at Gallup. So I've been there 15 years, and they sent me this PDF and they're like, pick a gift. And okay. Ryan, I am sharing my screen. What I picked was this Bose SoundLink Resolve portable speaker, and you know, a couple $100 for it, 360 wireless sound, waterproof, a pretty good battery, reviews on it. And one of those things I would probably never buy for myself. It was one of those gifts. I'm like, well, shoot. Yeah. It was on the list. And I'm like, this will make a great addition to when we go out on the deck to enjoy, the kids come over. I'm having more friends over now that we're past the pandemic for the most part. Hey, come on over, hang out on the deck with us. this will make a great speaker to just plop down in the middle of it and start get some music playing, right? That's just something. Yep. And I've got wireless speakers. I mean, I've probably got half a dozen of them around here.
Sure.
But Bose makes a pretty good, I mean, they've got a pretty good name with it. And so I'm kind of excited. So this is going to be added here in the next couple of weeks to the summer deck stuff that I've been putting together to enjoy time outside.
Yeah, I don't have anything as fancy as a Bose system. I've got a couple smaller ones that I throw them in the pool bag, right? So I take them with us out to the neighborhood pool. We walk down there. I don't mind if it gets splashed on, right? It's weather resistant. It's got the rubber coating and everything. So if it gets kicked over by someone running by the pool or even dumped in, I'm not worried about it. And we can still enjoy music out there, streaming from the phone that's, inside the swim bag, 20 feet away from the pool. And I don't have to worry about it falling into the pool necessarily. So yeah, Bluetooth speakers, wireless speakers, awesome summer tech there.
I think if you're finding yourself at the beach or you're going out and doing these kinds of things, these hybrid speaker battery combos, we can put two together where you can, you charge your phone on it and it's got some speakers in it. I think those could be a great buy to have on the beach. Technology's gotten so good on these batteries. You look at like Jackery or, Blue Eddy.
Yep.
They've got some really great small ones that are just portable and you take with you. And if they'll play music, that's a bonus. And if they have a light, even better, we're talking $300 to $600. So it's a fairly significant investment, but it may be one of those things that gets you through a power outage.
Absolutely.
Or takes care of you at the beach or charges the phone at the end of a long day on the beach when your phone's baked in the sun and the battery's gone and you need some juice, right? There could be some good options there.
Right. And Bob's last item was just a portable SSD. I know he loves taking his camera and drone, action cam, all of those things with him on these trips. So being able to offload all that content that you took and created during the day to a drive, especially, for him, he's probably going to be editing some of it on the road. Being able to edit off of those and not having to utilize your main storage on your system and kind of even having him as a backup. Portable SSD is just another nice piece there. I kind of brought up a couple items I wanted to chat about, not so much as computer related that Bob had there, but mine kind of, we talked about how hot it's been and everywhere, just about I saw a statistic, it was some high percentage, 70, 80, 90% of folks were in just super hot temperatures right now, especially here in the US. And it got me thinking, how can I make my house cooler? How can I save some money trying to, beat the heat, as they say. And we have a two-story home here in the Midwest, and we've been here for 6 years. And for the last six summers, I've said, next year I'm going to get either a secondary air conditioner or a, mini splits or something like that. And I'll talk about mini split here in a bit, but I haven't done it yet. Right. There's a cost commitment. I have to take time out of my day to get a hold of somebody and figure it out and pay for it. So I've just kind of dealt with that. But when the AC is running for hours and hours at a time, or, trying to keep multiple stories relatively cool and comfortable, I got to thinking, how can I make that a more efficient process? Make sure my equipment is running smoothly as best as it can. And I came across a product that I just wanted to bring up here and see if maybe you have heard about product. And this is the one that I found right off the bat, was this Cool and Save air conditioner mister. And how it essentially works is you've got this little device that sits on top of your outdoor unit, and this little flaps up when your outdoor unit kicks on. That fan blowing the air up and pulling air through the coils. And what that flap does is then activate a little switch in here that allows water from a hose to mist the coils on your air conditioner, right? And they say you can save up to 30% of the energy cost cooling your home. Have you heard of this, Jim? And if so, do you know anybody that's done it? Have you ever tried it? What do you think? Is this legit?
Never heard of it, but I love the idea. We've had, on really hot days, Nebraska gets really hot too. We're just straight north of you, Bob, Ryan. So
absolutely,
we're just up there. So gets super hot here. I've told people on the really hot days, if your air conditioner is struggling, just mist it, get the hose out, mist it down a little bit. That'll kind of help it out. One of the things that's interesting about this, I know we're showing pictures for the audio folks. It's really just a unit fan comes on, it pops up, opens up a valve, and then it mists the water out. One, a great little hack for this would be take your air conditioning condenser pump, because like, right, we create a ton of water getting it. We get that moisture out of the house,
out of the air.
We send it to the drain, send that out to this unit in a tank where it can grab from that water and then use it to spray out. That's like a double, whammy on efficiency out there. So
I hadn't thought about that.
I love that. I love that idea.
Yeah, no, and it, I, and then I get to looking at it, I'm like, well, how can I rig this up, right? To like, and so I was talking to a guy at work today about, well, you could, you know, you could get the lead from your thermostat, right? So when it tells the pump and everything to kick on, you could piggyback off of that signal potentially to open up a solenoid or move some sort of a servo to open up a water valve to kick on misting, right? So you didn't have to rely on creating some sort of flap if you didn't want to purchase this. It may just be easier to purchase this thing, right? For the do-it-yourself guy that doesn't want to rig something up and wants to be able to utilize something like this. But I'm thinking about getting one of these to try it out. I'm with you though. I've, you know, I'm out there always making sure there's no cottonwood that's clogging up my my coils and just running this thing into the ground.
I have to I spray it down about once a month just to make sure all that stuff is off of it. How much is this? Do you know? Did you get a price on this thing?
I did not get a price. I can't believe it's gonna be that much. I mean, I'm seeing some, you know, some pressure fit together has been added to my cart.
$100 Is that it? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So
that doesn't seem terrible.
You might be able to get a Groupon for it.
There you go. Deal.
I love the idea. It would be interesting to talk to an HVAC professional.
Right.
To just ask the question, by having that much water always available on there, would that cause secondary issues?
Right
to it, right?
And I had heard, you know, corrosion. What's coming out of that that pipe, right? Well, it's, you know, you could put a filter in there if you're worried about scaling or, you know, any sort of anything like that. If you have exceptionally hard water,
absolutely. Yeah, you could filter it. So it might be interesting to get some advice, you know, on that, or to be able to set a timer on it to say, and this is maybe where you could get a water timer that's attached to the hose that's going to this to say, okay, I only want it to, it'd be great if you could do it this and that for the
weather. Exactly where I went with it. Yep.
To say, oh, only turn this thing on when it's above 95 degrees. I don't need it going, you know, I don't need it running when the air is on an 80 degree day or something like that.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. And kind of speaking of, you know, that thermostat, I know I've been an Ecobee user since, well, we moved into this house. It was one of the things I wanted to take advantage of was an Ecobee thermostat with multiple sensors, right? I've got a sensor in the basement here. I've got one in our master bedroom upstairs. The main unit has one, and then we have one in the office, my wife's office on our first floor. And yeah, tying, you know, is there a way to use if this, then that, right? To say, hey, air conditioner kicked on, go ahead and open up this valve and then turn it off when it doesn't. I've had, you know, varying levels of success with getting those triggers being accurate or, you know, just having successful use with them. I don't know. What are you using for a thermostat? Do you have a smart one? Do you like it? Have you found improvements? No,
we have an electronic one. So it's not old school, but, and you can't program it. We just have not replaced it. And I think I will at some point. We thought at one point we were going to move, and I was like, well, I don't want to go through all the work. And then I thought maybe I'd replace my furnace at some point, but I don't think we are. So I think I need to pull the trigger on it and I just have to choose. I just have to choose which one. We just haven't done it yet. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And I've been happy with mine. They've come out with a couple newer models. I see no reason to update mine, right? I go back to my mom's house and, you know, she's got the, you know, the digital one on the wall. That's the standard that came with them, you know, that you can easily get at a big box home improvement store, right? I remember my grandparents had that gold Honeywell dial, right? And that thing ran for years. So I know these things are going to last, and that's about all they're
doing. Well, they don't require upgrades or firmware or, exactly. You know, they just work.
What do you mean it's a vulnerability in my thermostat?
I don't know if I need to tell, you know, tell the A lady to, We really do just leave the temperature at one setting. And now that my daughter's home all the time, it's not like we have that ability to move it around either. Mm-hmm. We kind of keep it at the same temp. So not a huge, I haven't seen a huge benefit for us. I know for some people it's life-changing, but for us, I haven't seen a huge reason.
So that kind of leads me to my next point, right? I have the Ecobee 3, I believe it is, and I have multiple sensors, right? The basement, and so like at least one on each floor. And even in it, I've got it configured to kind of average out to an average temperature. So throughout the day, it's really only taking into account our living room temperature and the upstairs main bedroom. And it's kind of averaging those two to come up with a general temperature for the house. Unfortunately, the basement still stays freezing cold. So on a day like, you know, today or some other day when it's hot and it's trying to average that temperature out, the basement's 65 degrees. The main level's sitting right around 73 or 72. And the upstairs bedroom is 76, right? So 76 is a little warmer than I like, especially at nighttime. I love sleeping in the cool, right? You put me in a hotel room and I've got that AC cranked down all the way because I'm not paying for the AC. And I would love to do it here, but it's just not efficient, or I'm not even sure it's possible for me to get so much colder without really putting some wear and tear on my equipment. So it got me thinking, how can I better cool my upstairs without freezing out the basement and the other levels, because they're all being cooled at the same time? And some folks in the neighborhood, they'll have two large AC units, one for upstairs, one for the main levels. But it got me looking into these do-it-yourself multi-zone mini split systems. In the US, we're still not up to speed, and they definitely are not as popular as they are, especially like in Europe, in European countries, some of the Middle Eastern areas, Asia. We just don't have the use of these, and I think we really should start looking towards these. I've utilized these, or at least experienced utilizing them, in multiple locations. There's a couple small cabins that we stay at out of town every now and then, right? They're these little 14 by 24 maybe cabins with a two-story, and you know, they've got kind of two little bedrooms and a bathroom and kitchen, and they just use these to heat and cool them throughout the year. It's one unit that does the same thing, and super efficient. And this Mr. Cool brand, this is kind of one of the ones that's it's more popular. Bosch makes them. There's a couple other big companies that make these. They're do-it-yourself installation now. Mm-hmm. And I'm really considering putting in one of these with multiple in-room, I forget the name now, the cartridges or the exhaust units, right? Put one in our bedroom, put one in each of the kids' bedrooms, and then one unit outside, run the lines up the side of the house, make them look nice, get them over there. And then I don't have to worry about the main home's AC unit trying to keep up with the heat of the upstairs, and this can kick on. And if the kids don't want it to be as cold in their room, they can adjust those individually. They don't have to be the same temperatures. Every room's got them configured however they want. Do you have any experience with the mini
No, but it's do it funny yourself? That you bring this up, because I've been looking at these for my shed. I've been slowly turning the shed into the man cave out there, and it's pretty warm, a couple months out of the year. And so I thought, well, maybe I'll install a mini split. And then it leads me down. Maybe I'll put a mini split in with solar. Then I'll put some batteries in there, run this thing off of the solar power, so I'm kind of getting free.
Sure.
Pretty soon I have a $10,000 cooling solution. You know, when you think about it. But I think the Mr. Cool is, I think, the leader in this area, and they the lines come charged. So that's what makes the DIY. You don't have to have a HVAC come guy and evacuate the lines and put refrigerant. They come charged, hook it up. I've watched dozens of videos of guys installing these. Pretty easy, pretty simple. And I love that idea about, bringing it to your upstairs. You will probably notice a significant difference in how hard the basement and the main floor have to work once you're taking care of the upstairs. Mm-hmm.
The only thing I need to look into a little more, I've kind of gone down that same rabbit hole of, I've watched some YouTube videos and, looked on Lowe's and Home Depot kind of pricing things out, is if I do leave that outside unit down on the ground, I'm going to need longer than 25 feet of hose to get to these rooms, right? So does that mean I need to bring that unit up and mount it on the side of the house?
Yes.
Is the HOA going to allow for that? I've got a covered patio on the back of the house where I might actually be able to get away with it because you may not be able to see it from most vantage points outside of our yard, or unless you're up on the roof. So,
and you definitely want something shady spot, like, you know, you really want to think through this, your placement of it for sure.
Yep. No, charged cables. I've got a neighbor that he does rentals, and he'll come by, you know, and look at our normal unit and give it an extra charge at the beginning of the season, right? I've done some favors for him. So he, at the beginning of the summer, was like, all right, let's take a look at this. Make sure you're all charged up for the summer and good to go. So, you know, I know I can count on him. I have heard some drawbacks of you do this DIY work and something breaks and you need to get a pro out. Sometimes they just don't want to touch these things because either it's a brand that they can't get support for, so they don't know where to get parts, right? It's more work for them to support it. And then, you know, I've seen some pushback on that, but I'm really looking into this as an affordable cooling solution for the upstairs.
Yeah, I think it's a good option, and it's not for everybody, but I think it's for some for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Now I know, you know, Bob's gone over some items. These are some that I brought up. I know you've put together a little list of items you wanted to talk about as well, kind of related to summer tech. What do you have for us?
Yeah, so I got a pellet smoker for Father's Day. I bought it for myself. Let's just be really clear. And I got a great deal on it. And a Pit Boss pellet smoker, 1,000 square inches of space. It's basically a barrel smoker, fully automated with an auger. Doesn't have Wi-Fi, but the tech angle on this, of course, is I use meter, M-E-A-T-E-R, meter temperature probes. If I'm cooking a large piece of meat, like a turkey or a roast or something like that, we put that in there, and that kind of gives both an ambient and a meat temperature. And I have an iGrill device that I've had for a while, now owned by Weber, that I can put on the actual grill. So I can now tell via Wi-Fi coming in, what's the temperature of the grill in two locations? And then the grill has two temperature sensors. So I can actually measure four areas of this grill at a time, what the temperature is, plus the meat. And so it gives me some great opportunities to Mark Robson, who's been on Home Gadget Geeks. You know, we always do the summer special on it. He kind of talked me into it. So in honor of that, I have some beef jerky on the grill right now. It'll be done at the end of the show. So anybody listening, if they can get over to my house, come around back, beef jerky will be ready. It'll be fresh. I'd love to have you as a part of that. But it's actually, Ryan, it's got me checking meat prices on a way more regular basis of like, now I know where top and bottom round are cheapest, or what's brisket going for, like, you know, all those things.
Well, you're looking outside your normal, like, oh, I always go get groceries here, but now you're comparing, you know, the butcher shop and this, that, and the other, right? Yeah. And comparing. Well,
my local bakers, every couple days, they take some meat, like it's getting close to that sell-by day, and they put it, you know, instead of $6.99 a pound, it's $4.15 a pound. Well, that's a pretty nice, you know, it's neat. And the cuts of meat that I need for jerky are different than what most consumers have gotten, like hamburger and steak. That's all they really know how to cook.
Right. Right.
So I'm in this top and bottom round space where or brisket, that's a little more expensive. Those cuts of meats are actually a little more available, and oftentimes they're on sale more because people just aren't buying them. Right.
Yeah.
So keeping track of, from a summer standpoint, I guess this is a side tip on that, checking for those values. Yes, even the grocery store has values. In the beer section, we didn't do a beer pour, but we always do that on Home Gadget Geeks. At the local one, when they're clearancing out the singles, they sell them for 75 cents a can. Well, that's $4.50 a six pack. That's pretty reasonable.
Yeah, that's a nice deal. Right?
So I try and catch the place when they're putting those out, then I can mix and match at $4.50 a six pack and basically get two for one in that case. So make sure you're checking this time of high inflation. Make sure you're checking in and you're using the tech that's available. Every grocery store has an app. There's ways to check through the app now. There's ways to do that. I mean, online shopping has gotten just nuts. So I mean, crazy good from that standpoint. Pellet smoker has been, for me, has been a big tech item. you can certainly make it as techie as you like. I could have a camera. Actually, I do. I could be. I'm looking at it right now. I have a camera.
That's funny.
A ring camera facing down on the two grills right now. I'm not measuring temperatures down here because I don't need to. It's on the lowest setting. But when we're doing the bigger cuts of meat, I always run those through and I can get access to them from anywhere. So some good summer tech.
Awesome.
Last week, Ed Sullivan was on the show. We talked about e-bikes. And Ryan, I don't know how this e-bike thing got away from me, but
yeah,
holy crap, have they gotten good over the last two years?
I think they have. Right? Yeah, you know, we saw scooters in our town, you know, the little electric scooters, and those were kind of popular for a while, but coming back, you know, a lot of more people have come back to the office, and I've noticed a couple folks using an e-bike as their mode of transportation now. Right. And I saw, you know, one of the guys in IT with me, he had one that was, I was like, man, that thing's kind of stretched out. It's got an extra seat on the back and some cargo and lights. And like, it looked like the real deal. But it sounds like you've, been doing some research yourself.
Yeah. Well, during the show, or right before the show, I'd gotten an email, I'd watched a YouTube video on actually a guy who's been covering, you know, I went completely wireless at home for my internet. I'm using T-Mobile 5G internet here at that. I don't even have a cable anymore. Right. The guy who reviews those, just on a whim, reviewed this bike. And JSON, I think, is the name of it, but there's 1,000 different brands right now. I think they'll eventually consolidate, but Schwinn is even doing it, right? You can get, you can buy a Schwinn, like they have financing for you. But when I was looking at these bikes at the beginning of the pandemic, they were all $2,000 or $3,000 or $4,000, right? And I found this bike, we talked about it on the show, $800. And I think we're starting to see some pretty good it's JASION ride.com. If you want to check out that bike, JASION ride, all one word, .com. And they're like $800. And it got me thinking, Ryan, like, I think the competition is in, there we go. I think the competition is in a full effect. And if you think you missed the e-bike, you know, market, this may be the best time right now. Is the interest is kind of going down a little bit. A lot of folks bought them during the pandemic, and I think we're commuting again, and maybe people aren't buying them as much. So this may be the time. And again, I'm seeing some prices drop on it. This particular one, Ed brought this up on the show. It's 50 pounds. As I started looking at all the other e-bikes and comparing them, they're all 50 to 75 pounds. So they're heavy bikes to begin with. This one has a range, you know, it's got an LED screen. It's got a range of 40 miles. It's, I think 250 watts. I mean, it's kind of your standard commuter bike on this. I would, Ryan, like to be able to test ride these things, which is the one big drawback to doing it this way. I would love to be able to go to a store and get on one and try it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's got me seriously considering, my bike broke a couple years ago and I never replaced it. If I could go e-bike, I've been renting our city bikes, and they've got, you know, they have e capabilities, and they're great. They're great to ride. They're heavy, but they're great. You know, they're not great when the battery runs out and you have a 50 pound bike.
Stuck with it. Yeah.
You know, you're like,
oh, it's a little harder to pedal than I thought.
I'm working out. This one disconnects, you know, you can pull the battery off. So in theory, I could pull the battery off, take it in with me, you know, lock the bike up outside, take the battery and charge it at work, then put it back on right at home. Right. So I'm thinking about it. $800. That's a pretty good price point to get back into a bike. You know, maybe worth the, maybe. And I think if you could even with some deals, you could get a little bit cheaper.
So one thing I noticed with some of these, which, you know, this, and this model, the JSON ride, looks much more like a traditional bicycle than the ones that I had looked at. I think I had been looking at Rad Power Bikes.
Yep.
They're a little kind of, I don't know, a little funkier looking, more scooter design than a traditional bicycle. Yeah. One thing that bugged the heck out of me, though, is how they all still run all the cabling out front in kind of a little mesh wire loom here out front. I'm surprised we haven't seen more running it through the handlebars and the stem to kind of hide some of that. I just, there's a lot of going on there between your brakes, your shifting. And I guess, you know, we're still kind of like that on most traditional bicycles. I'd hate for, you know, a cable to get snagged that's controlling the screen or something. I'm sure it's probably pretty rare, but that was just one thing that surprised me. It looks like this also probably uses standard sized parts for tires and seats, right? Some of those other companies I found utilize a tire that may look to be standard, but is maybe a little different size, a little too wide, a little too, you know, the radius is a little different. And so you've got to get parts through the manufacturer and dealer, which makes repairs and just upkeep a little harder. But
I'm still looking, this is not maybe the one I'm gonna land on. I may even go to a bike shop and ask some folks, like, just to kind of get a feel for, you know, you could be getting some really cheap, like that picture that we're looking at on the screen right now. That guy's about as big as I am, and bike looks a little small. So you kind of go, okay, is that the right? I did see some of these bikes are routing the cables through the frame, you know, and so you're getting a little bit more. Now, for some of the really good bikes, you're getting in the $3,000 range. I could get a moped for $3,000.
Yeah, I saw some really expensive good scooter. Ones.
Yeah,
I saw some multi-$1,000 e-bikes at the bike shop this spring when I was looking for a bike for my son, and I was like, oh, those things are expensive, right? You know, but they're a high-end brand. There were some Treks, and I forget the other brand that they had, but they were, I mean, they looked like really nice bikes. The battery was all internal to the frame, so they kind of enclosed it or made it look more internal as opposed to this, where it's got the removable external battery. Just some of those differences that between them, but very cool. Very nice.
Yeah. Just a thought. Again, it was one of those things that I skipped during the pandemic, and it now may be the time, if you skipped it too, and you're in this situation where you're like, oh, maybe I will, 'cause they got really expensive. I mean, everything got expensive. E-bikes may be one of those areas where they've overbuilt. And so there may be some deals. It was so hot for so long. I think everybody rushed to the space, and they're, if you're, for those who are patient and wait, and if you're a deal guy like me, now may be the time to be looking for an e-bike. So old man in the chat said Best Buy runs e-bikes on their daily deal sale all the time. They're usually between $800 and $1,200.
Nice.
And that's a pretty good, that'd be a good place to look. Again, I'd like to go try a few of them. I need to figure out where can I go and ride. I like to kind of ride it before I drop a grand on something like this. Yeah. I got a little show and tell. So this will be no computer screens, but last summer I built a big fire pit out in the backyard. I mimicked the Solo technology, right? You know, getting the air to come in through the bottom and the sides for smokeless. And I kind of built my own. It's concrete, brick, and metal, but it works. It's a big old fireplace. Well, you can't have a fire pit without wood, right? Yep. It just doesn't work that way. And I'm not going to pay. I'm not that kind of guy who's going to pay, you know, $150 to have somebody drop wood on my driveway. I'm going to go cut my own wood, because that's what we do here in Nebraska. So, but I don't want a gas chainsaw. Like, I'm not, I want an e-saw. I want e-saw. That's, I think, a book of character, but I want an e-saw. I want a battery one, because that's, they're less maintenance. I don't have to worry about gas. Yep. So I've kind of gone down the path of three different battery operated chainsaws, all the same company, because I wanted them to share the same battery. And I've learned a few things through. So first, this is down here in the basement. First, let's bring in here the this is a Black & Decker. It's a 10 inch, you know, a 20 volt. So that goes here on the battery side right there, 20 volt saw. And I've been out pretty, if you think of chainsaws, pretty comparable, good torque, because batteries got good torque to them. So it cuts really well. The one drawback to it is, even on the biggest batteries, I get about two wheelbarrows. Now I got sawdust all over my desk. I get about two wheelbarrows full of wood cuts in it. They don't cut forever, like a gas chainsaw.
Right.
As long as you have gas, right, you're cut. Now you could carry, like everything else, you could carry a couple batteries with you. Mm-hmm. Batteries have gotten kind of expensive, but from a performance standpoint, probably as good as the low. These are like $100, $100 and a little bit of a change.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Yeah. So from a performance standpoint, if you're just doing a little bit of cutting from time to time, I think it's a great buy. Super low maintenance, easy to use, really, really safe. You know, you let go of the thing and it stops.
Yeah.
It doesn't stop. Well, but I don't necessarily want to climb up in trees with chainsaws, right? I don't necessarily, or sometimes the brush is a little difficult, or for people who aren't comfortable with chainsaws, because there's kind of those people too. Maybe this is your mom. This is for your mom. This is a chainsaw for your mom.
Oh my gosh.
So I bought one of these little clippers. Whoa. That definitely had side dust. I'll have to vacuum when we're done. But this opens. Yeah, even got some. You can see this opens the little jaws, right? And this.
Yeah. Here, so
you, and it's two handed. You can see the power on the bottom. By the way, it shares the same exact battery as the one I just showed you on the chainsaw. So it's kind of cool. I can share batteries, which a little cheaper when you're buying these without batteries, because you can, you know, they come tool only. So the nice thing about this is the chain is completely covered, right? Yep. And when you want to cut it, you open that up. You just open that up, put it around. It'll cut up to a 4-inch limb. Put it around it, and then you press the two. You got to push them both at the same time for safety. You push the two triggers at the bottom. The thing cuts it. Rink.
It squeezes it down for you. Yeah, you don't have to squeeze it.
It's spring loaded, so it'll close itself. And is really, really handy, like for brush or where you're in an area where having a chainsaw is not convenient.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I bought a gas one this spring to do some work. And you're exactly right. I have some cedar trees that I need to cut out for fire maintenance and things like that. And getting those lower branches that are sticking out with the chainsaw is just more work than it feels like it should be. And something smaller that you could just get in there easily. Right. I don't want to be in there with a handsaw I'm not built for that anymore. Something like this would be great.
Yeah. And again, $100, maybe a little bit more, let's say 150 for this. Runs just like a chainsaw. You put a little oil in there. It's got same kind of maintenance. You can sharpen up the blade on this after you can see I've used it. It's got still
got a twig in there.
I didn't realize I hadn't got the last stick out of there when I cut this. So I like this from a brush cutting standpoint. So if I'm going into heavy brush, this thing is great. Run it on the ground where, you know, a chainsaw, you got to kind of get underneath it and turn it to the side.
Yep.
This level right to the ground, just take that thing off.
Cool.
Right at ground level. So that was a cool little buy. But then I thought I got some trees that are starting to hit the garage. Like, you know, we're here in Nebraska, a lot of wind blowing and stuff. I can hear them banging up against the thing. But again, I don't want to take my chainsaw on the roof. Not necessarily interested in doing that. And there's some spots I don't want to be climbing trees. So this came just yesterday. So I just picked up a pole saw from Black & Decker. Again, same 20-volt battery, works just the same. Got a little chainsaw in there, and this is on a pole, right?
Right.
Make sure I'm not hitting anything up there. So it comes with two segments and a handle that'll go 10 feet, and then you can get it another 4 feet up there by reaching up, right? So they advertise up to 14 feet. And gives you just a nice little safe way to get the limbs that you can't kind of reach.
Right.
And even if I was on the roof, I take this on my roof and cut the small limbs that are maybe scratching the shingles type deal.
You're up that high. You're up that high, right? You, like you said, you don't want that chainsaw right by you. You're already up on the roof. This thing gets the blade away from you, gets you a little, you don't have to be all the way on the peak, or, you know, you can have that ladder kind of.
Yeah,
up against the side of the garage and getting some of that stuff. No, that's very cool.
So it's given me three, and again, all battery, right? No gas. I brought them in the house. They don't stink like you would. And Kevin asked, "Are those 20 volt?" And these are the 20 volt ones.
Yes.
And so it just gives me. I just chose Black & Decker because that's just a brand that I've liked. I can get their stuff cheap through Ace Hardware. We have a Ace Hardware store real close to us. But Ryan just gave me the opportunity to kind of think again, getting getting away from gas, you know, and the batteries have gotten so much better. I mean, I was one of those early guys with a battery operated mower before they had even cartridges. This was like a, you know, a lawnmower or like a marine battery inside the mower kind of thing.
And they weighed a ton.
Yeah. Oh, they're terrible. They were terrible. They were not very good. Gotten much better.
I mowed a neighbor's yard for him in the springtime, and he has an electric one. And once I figured out, you know, pull this lever, do that, and we're good to go. It didn't weigh anything. It was so quiet. It was the weirdest thing. I had never done it. You know, I've been mowing lawns since I was, who knows, 8 or 9, 10 years old with a gas mower since then. And just using this electric one was so crazy, but it was a really nice, you know, experience. I haven't made that move. I've considered doing battery on a couple things. I do like Black & Decker as well, right? I usually buy their drills. I have a weed whacker that's battery powered as well.
Yeah.
But I'm like you, I want to standardize on a battery. I just never need to buy all or a lot of tools all at once. So I end up, they've either phased a battery out or I pick up a DeWalt and then a Black & Decker. And I'm really trying to just kind of standardize on Black & Decker.
Yeah. From now on. That's kind of where I've gone. I use Slick Deals to look for batteries, you know, kind of good way to do it. Old man asks in the chat, does it have an oil reserve? So I haven't looked at the pole saw that I just got. It came yesterday. But both the chainsaw and the scissors saw, I don't know what we call it. Both of those have an oil reserve and a pump that you can use. So you oil them up. The chainsaw, it's got a pretty healthy one. And then there's a button you push to, doesn't use much oil. You sharpen them. They use regular chains. So that's the nice thing. It's kind of a standard chain size. So you just, if that chain were to go bad or whatever, you can sharpen it if you want to. There's some really cool tech that's come into sharpening chainsaw blades, where now you just get a unit, attach it to the top of the chain. It's all set in the right directions. You just take your drill, you know, run it through with the thing and then turn it around, do the other one. That's where that used to be a lot. Yeah. That used to be a lot harder. I mean, a sharp chain is worth its weight in gold, you know?
I hadn't ever utilized a chainsaw until I bought the one this spring. And that was the first thing I realized once I had used it quite a while. I was like, boy, this thing's having a little more trouble cutting. And I actually swapped the chain because I wanted to get some work done a little quicker than it was going. And you put that new one on and it was just slicing through again. And I was like, okay, well, it was definitely the chain getting dulled. So I need to find a tool to sharpen those. Sounds like
it should, when you're using a chainsaw, you literally should be able to set the bar on top, start it, and it should pull itself through. That's how you know it's sharp, right? It'll literally grab the wood and kind of pull itself through. Mm-hmm. If you're pushing hard on it, chances are
probably
and the electric won't go as fast as a gas. You just can't get the RPMs, but you do get a little bit of the torque. So like, you know, an electric battery has a little bit more torque than a gas engine, so it's a little bit of trade-offs on that. It doesn't go super fast, but for what I'm doing, and Kevin says in the chat room, he says it's a great topic, my gas chainsaws are great for heavy use down at the farm. If you're out all day cutting wood, you got to have a gas chainsaw. But for the house, I'm mainly going electric as well. And I don't want cords. Like, I don't want to be cutting wood with cords. I had a plug-in electric chainsaw at one point in time. And it's just, they're just too dangerous. Like, having those cords around is actually dangerous. It's a tripping hazard. Some of those kinds of things. So I think it's a great, and it's so much less maintenance. Listen, I can cut wood and throw it in the garage and forget about it, and it's not going to get, the gas isn't going to go bad, the oil, you know, for the most part,
go bad. Like Joe was saying, you know, trying to start a crappy gas weed eater, especially after winter, right? You have a bowl or something that dries out, or a line that cracks, and
something's not slapping up. A battery. I have a Black & Decker weed eater that's a 40 volt, so the 40 shares. I have a leaf blower and a weed whacker that's 40 volts, share the same battery, right? There's nothing better than first thing in the spring, snap the battery in and you're off to the races.
Yeah, you're going.
You know, so and the batteries have gotten so much better. They've gotten so much more expensive. That's kind of the hard part. So My tip is on this one, Slick Deals for your batteries. Make sure you go to slickdeals.com, I think it is. Sign up for an alert for the batteries you use. And then just watch for them from time to time. And the generic ones, that's not the right word. The knockoffs, that's the right word. The knockoffs have gotten better and are more plentiful. So a $90 Black & Decker, you can probably get for $40. I get what you pay for, but it could be an alternative if you don't want to pay full price for the battery. And they've gotten pretty plentiful on Amazon. So,
yeah. Well, Jim, we've covered a ton of topics tonight. I want to make sure we, you know, kind of give your show some information, right? I want to, you know, what do you want to plug as far as Home Gadget Geeks goes, what you got going on, maybe some past shows you did, what you got coming up, just where can we find you, all of those types of things.
Yeah, easiest way, homegadgetgeeks.com. That's our pod page site. It has all the different ways to subscribe and all those. If you want to join us live, we do the same thing on Thursday nights that you guys do. In fact, sometimes you move your show to Thursday nights.
Very rarely.
No.
We've
no,
known to do it, it, it.
Yeah, you do pre-show here. We're at theaverageguy.tv/live. So that's the primary site, theaverageguy.tv. Hey, listen, if you're interested in discussions just like Ryan and I had tonight, where it's kind of variety, we don't stick on one thing. We cover a bunch of different topics. You'd probably like Home Gadget Geeks. We're an hour in some change every single week. You can join us live or subscribe to it. Topics, we talked about e-bikes a couple weeks ago, talked about AI-driven, cams, home protection cams like Ring and such. We cover a whole variety of topics. So if you're looking for something, who doesn't need another podcast to listen to? Don't give up on this one. You can't.
No. We still want you to come here
to go to that one. But yeah. We'd love to have you check it out, homegadgetgeeks.com.
Awesome. Well, yeah, I think with that, we're going to wrap things up. Like most weeks, after this show, I'll be out on Twitch, twitch.tv/thinkcomputers. Going to be streaming some Apex Legends, most likely tonight. Don't know how long we'll go. I was up way too late last night. Trouble getting out of bed this morning. So who knows how late we're going to go. I'm actually feeling pretty good right now. So, you know, it might be a standard stream. So if you want to hang out for a little while longer, that stream will be up a little bit after we end the show here. But with that, we'll say thanks to everybody coming out. We had a lot of folks, you know, some of our regulars, Old Man in the chat is here with us quite often. Kevin, Joseph, appreciate you coming out and participating in the show. And until next time, we'll catch you later.